This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Morning, and you are listening to Positively Revolting. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And today we are talking about housing as a human right. We are talking about housing is for everyone. We are talking about the foreclosure crisis and the need for people to be able to stay in their homes, for communities to stay together at this time, and what's being done to facilitate that happening. We have with us three guests this morning from from Housing is for Everyone, and we are Oregon. We have Mike Crenshaw, we have Dave Richland, and we have Debbie Austin, who also has just returned from Washington, D.C., where she took part in actions last week to draw attention to this crisis nationally. So thank you all for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
Such a rich topic, don't you think?
Indeed.
Indeed. So, Debbie, you had an interesting experience last week. So I heard. Yeah. If you call getting arrested being interesting. And it is, huh?
Yeah.
So what happened? What happened? What happened in D.C.? What were you there for? And then what was your experience?
I was there in solidarity with other homeowners and actually just mostly homeowners that have just been foreclosed upon illegally or couldn't get any help, and they're being evicted, and it's just
a mess.
What
was the name of the action?
It's the Home Defense League.
Okay, and so you all were in D.C. Mm-hmm. Where were you? I don't want to say protest. I'm so sorry. I hate that word anymore. An action.
It was
action.
Just a march.
It was a march. Okay.
It was a march, and we wanted to see the DOJ, which is Eric Holder. All we wanted was...
he's a busy man these days, too.
I don't care how busy he is. You know, he should be busy, you know, helping the people, because we look to him for justice, because, you know, we have to take on the banks, and we're just common people, you know. He's up there. He should be working for us. I mean, doesn't he have to be voted in?
No, he's appointed.
Oh. Well, then I
his
appoint him out.
Voted. His boss is voted in.
And who is that?
That would be Barack Obama.
Mr. Obama.
Yes, uh-huh. President Obama.
I think the question is who their bosses are. You know, when you guys are there at the Department of Justice and they're protecting Fannie Mae's right to rob people, who are they working for?
Well, they're working for the banks.
And that's sort of the situation in a nutshell. You know, the government has spent billions, trillions, bailing out banksters over the last 4 or 5 years since this crisis started, 4.5 years or so. And yet people are ending up in the streets. People are ending up out of their homes. Bankers are getting paid.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
but
yeah.
People are losing their homes. How does this all work? I mean, that is just not seeming very fair to me.
Well, that's why we went to see Eric Holder. How does this work? And he was too chicken. Oh, I can't say that.
That's right.
That is correct.
He is too chicken, too.
And it tastes like chicken. He just wouldn't even show his face. And we don't even know if he was there. I mean, nobody came out from his office and said, "I'm sorry, he's not here today." Nothing. But I got to tell you something. When we went there and we were on the steps, and they have these big, big, tall doors. I mean, they're just massive, you know, like 3 stories high. You open it up. They got big knockers on them. And I was knocking, using these knockers, and I go, "We'd like to see the wizard, please." And I'm thinking, you know, that is very well close to what I was asking for, because it was just almost impossible to see him.
The guy behind the curtain.
Yeah, the guy behind the curtain.
So you got arrested, though. Why do you think? I mean, why if you?
Because they didn't like me.
Well, why did they? I heard they were tasing people there.
Yeah, they tased my friend May, who came with me to D.C. This little girl, her name is Carmen Pittman, and she just a little tiny thing. She's just skin and bones, and they tased her. I mean, she just went down like a sack of potatoes. I mean, there was no reason for it. None.
So you guys were just congregating outside and wanting to speak to Eric Holder.
Yes, and we just didn't, we weren't going to leave until we saw him and talked to him and just said, hey, how is this possible? In my case, I made all my payments.
Yeah, I'm curious, and I'm sure our listeners are very curious as to your story.
Let's back up and maybe get into that and how it is that you got into the struggle in the first place. So there you were with your family having a home.
Yeah, we had a nice little home, and over here on 77th Street, and everything is just normal. I mean, the economy crashed in 2008. My husband got a pay cut, and then a year or two later, he got cancer, and I had back surgery the same month, as a matter of fact. And then a year after that, I came down with cancer. But we always made our house payment, always. And when we saw that we were getting into debt and it was just spiraling down, we filed for bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
And in the bankruptcy, we asked for a loan modification. We asked for that before we went into bankruptcy. And we didn't qualify. So we did the bankruptcy, and then mysteriously we qualified. We got it, succeeded with it, made the payments. And then, let's see, the first actual, after being told that we actually had the loan and our new amount would be, it was right after that they said that we were 3 months behind. And I'm thinking, how in the world? And so I call the bank. Well, the bank won't talk to me because we're in bankruptcy. I didn't know why they wouldn't talk to me. But when you're in bankruptcy, lawyers only communicate. So she says, well, you have to call your bank, your lawyer. So I called our bankruptcy attorney.
Sure.
Well, he didn't do anything. Nothing. His name is Todd Trialweiler. And
you kind of hope that you have a lawyer that's working for you.
That would be nice because I understand that, you know, they're supposed to be your advocate.
And you're paying them, actually.
Oh, yeah. Big time. And he did. And the letter that he sent is, oh, we received this letter from Home Street. Let me know if there's anything I can do for you. So I call him up, you know, yeah, what's going on? Oh, well, you have to talk to the bank. And I said, okay. So I called the bank. So the bank says, no, you have to talk to your lawyer. So I called the lawyer back. And he says, no, you got to talk to the bank. And I mean, we're going back and forth. And this is over several days because lawyers, they don't call you right back. They have to wait a day because they're really important people. And I'm not. So this is all going over the course of a few days. And they said, well, we'll just send a waiver so that they can talk to you directly. Oh, okay. So I call the bank and I tell them what the lawyer's doing. And she says, they can't do that. We cannot talk to you. We cannot do this. So you have to talk to your lawyer. Well, after all this, now another month goes by. And now I'm 6 months behind, because that's the new mortgage math. You go from 3 to 6 months in 1 month. So, yeah, it was fun. It was like a roller coaster. And they said, if you don't pay up, we're going to get a stay of relief from the bankruptcy so that we can start foreclosure proceedings. And I'm still going, what the heck? I don't know. Nobody will talk to me.
Sounds incredibly frustrating.
It was.
And horrifying.
And I was going through cancer treatments at
the same time.
All at the same time.
Feeling like you really have no advocate.
None.
And so there you. So the crisis is continuing onwards.
And it goes. They succeed in getting their stay. And so the house is now out from under the protection of bankruptcy. And they, in August, I receive a call from Home Street Bank saying, if you pay us $20,000 or $21,000, that would bring you up to date and we'll stop proceedings. And I'm thinking, well, you know, if I had $21,000, don't you think I'd do that? And
right.
So I said, well, I guess you got to do what you got to do. But, you know, at this point, now you got to understand, too, that I was going through chemotherapy and I was one of the lucky ones where it affects your speech a little bit and my memory. And I could not remember things. So And I would even have my sister be on the phone, on the phone while I was talking to the bank.
Good
so
idea.
That she could take notes and remember things. Anyway, I just thought, well, that's it. I don't know what to do. I was just at a complete loss. And a friend of mine, Gail, she received a notice on her door about We Are Oregon and fighting foreclosures. And I said, well, hold on to that because I need to see what that's about. And then I got one on my door, like just a few days later. So I called, went to the meeting, and I couldn't believe how many other people was going through the same thing. Now, it may be a different circumstance in how you get there, but it all, the end result is the foreclosure and the eviction. Mm-hmm. So we fight this. I go to court. And I show the judge my proof. I have my canceled checks. I have my bank statements. And I have the receipts from Home Street Bank showing that I made the payments mm-hmm. and that everything was up to date until they stopped accepting it.
Right.
Yeah. And in fact, the last check that I had sent in, they had put it through their system and spit it out and put white stickers on the back of the pay coupon and the check.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like they knew, but they just stopped. They sent it back on that second letter that they sent to the lawyer, which came to me. So, what do you do? And I said, well, they said, well, we'll just see what we can do to help you fight. Well, anyway, I showed the judge all this. And the judge said on a previous, 2 weeks previous to that, when she realized I had a case, she says, you need to get a lawyer. And she handed me, yeah.
Another one? How many are you?
Well, this
so
was,
you're supposed to support the legal community. Okay.
Yeah. So she gave me a list of names and numbers of lawyers and potential help and everything. The legal aid isn't even here, I don't think, because I couldn't get anything. I couldn't, college at like Lewis and Clark,
mm-hmm.
no, they wouldn't help. The Bar Association never would return my call. I got no help whatsoever. So I had a friend who knew a paralegal. He wrote up everything legally for me. And this is where he found that... on that loan modification, there's a three-month trial. There's anywhere from 3 to 6 months trial period. And ours was 3 months. And they were not counting that as full payments. So it's like the right hand of the bank didn't know what the left side of the bank was doing deliberately. So as far as Home Street was concerned, I wasn't making full payments. And therefore, we're going to foreclose on you. But yet... the loan modification saying, oh, yeah, we approve you. Everything's great. You know, life is fun. And this is how I got stuck. So I showed the Judge Karen Immergut. Make sure we get those names in there, folks.
Mm-hmm. It's important to know names. It
is. Yeah, because even if she runs unopposed, you still don't want to vote for her. So I showed her this stuff. And she says, well, I told you you needed to get an attorney. And an attorney would have told you to put this on a sworn affidavit because I can't accept it like this. And I'm holding my original receipts, mm-hmm. my checks, my bank statements, everything, literally holding them in front of her. She threw it out because it wasn't on a sworn affidavit. But what is a sworn affidavit? It's a swearing that this is the truth as much as you know it.
Mm-hmm.
So why didn't she swear me in? And since I was pro se, which means I'm representing myself, there's supposed to be more leniency there.
Mm-hmm.
And I found this out from...
You've had quite an education.
Yes. Yes, I have. And I just hope I can remember it all. but the attorney that I spoke to in Washington, D.C., who is in Jeff Merkley's office, said... that is totally wrong what she did, because on a pro se case, they're supposed to be more lenient because they know you don't have the education for the to know all the laws. Mm-hmm. But I had went to the Oregon Library and I found where they had defaulted, where they were wrong. Mm-hmm. And so everything they said was supposed to be, had to be brought into question. But she wouldn't listen. She just threw it out. And she allowed the foreclosure. And then she, there was an attorney there for Fannie Mae. His name is Brian Cox. She allowed him to start eviction proceedings. And that was back in November of 2012. And the actual eviction took place January 16th.
Okay, I'm just going to take 1 second here to let folks know that this is Positively Revolting Talk Radio this morning. I'm Lynn, I'm here with Ani, and we have been listening to Debbie Austin's tale of foreclosure and she's not alone in what is going on with her at all. That there's a lot of folks, this is one person's story, this is a lot of folks that's happening to. If you are one of those folks, if you have your tale of foreclosure, your story that you need to tell, this is a talk radio show, and you can call in at 503-231-8187 with any questions. For Debbie, Mike Crenshaw and Dave Richland are also here. They are with Housing Justice and many other organizations. We'll just say Housing Justice. Next time I ID, we'll do the rest of them. But 503-231-8187 is the number to call this morning.
Indeed, you can also find Positively Revolting on Facebook. You can like us there, follow conversations throughout the week, and stay in touch with us. You can also find us on Gmail, where we are, in fact, positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. So your story, again, sadly, it's not uncommon.
No.
And this is where We Are Oregon comes in. This is where Housing mm-hmm. is for Everyone comes in. Let's talk a little bit about the community organizing aspect to keep people in their homes, to fight this sort of, we'll say nonsense, because we're on the radio.
You call it nonsense, I call it something else.
You know, I call it what we need to on the radio. Malarkey has been my favorite euphemism for years. But, Dave, you're with Oregon, We Are Oregon, yeah?
Yeah, the foreclosure group.
The foreclosure group.
Yes.
What's that group doing?
Well, what we're doing is trying to make people aware of what's going on. Debbie's story sounds kind of bizarre, yet I've listened to these stories, Debbie's story and dozens of others, and the same things are happening over and over again. we talk about the failure of the financial system. I don't see it as a failure. It was a success for the banks. They're making record profits. Amen. They were bailed out. The failure was in their good faith to their investors, to the homeowners who got the bad loans. But these banks were deliberately making these bad loans.
Yeah.
Then they turn around and talk about personal responsibility of the people that took the loans, that were duped and sold the bad loans. And there was a period where they were making these bad loans, turning around and selling investors these bogus securities across the planet. I mean, the financial crisis we're seeing in Europe is a direct result of the bad securities the European banks bought from our banks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so this is a global failure, but it's a global success for the big banks because they made off with all the money. They siphoned all the money out of the treasury and the bailouts, and now we can't fix the roads in Portland. I was driving up Division Street today, and it's a mess over there.
Mm-hmm.
But
and yet the banks don't actually even have penalties. You know, they're bailed out. They're fully they're happy.
Yeah. Well.
We've taken care of the banks.
Yeah. It's like not the Department of Justice anymore. It's the Department of Rackets. It seems like the bankers get off with a slap on the wrist. Not even a slap on the wrist. It's like the cost of doing business.
Exactly. So
they paid $25 billion in this mortgage settlement for $700 billion worth of damage they did to our economy. And even if you weren't foreclosed on, you lost value in your home. People lost hundreds of thousands, and over the across the country, just across the United States,
right,
there were hundreds of billions of dollars lost in equity in people's homes who made their payments, who weren't foreclosed on.
And who now are being told, well, they're just a little underwater.
That's right.
Just a little underwater. It's okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. These things happen.
And we need to keep working on this, and we need to the system can never work until the people who are responsible for causing this crisis, i.e., success for the banks, are brought to justice, and there have to be real consequences to breaking laws. And what we're saying now is collusion between the courts and the banks to throw people out, even if they try to follow the rules in every way, shape, and form, and even if they prove fraud in their mortgage contract. I took a business law when I was in junior college, and I thought I learned then that if there's fraud done in a contract, the contract is void.
Uh-huh.
But yet we don't. That's somehow forgotten now. I don't understand.
It doesn't apply to banks, I think. You forgot that part of the class.
Well, it's a sick double standard, I think.
I think it is a sick double standard, right on. So if people are interested in this struggle and helping people stay in their homes and helping turn the situation around and actually, getting the attention on the banks that needs to be put to the banks and keeping our neighbors in their houses so that our communities can stay together, how do people get involved?
Well, I personally don't believe in doing any one thing. We have to do everything we can. Mm-hmm. And getting involved with We Are Oregon is a good start. That's how I got started in January of 2012. I was having problems. I've been having problems with my mortgage since the fall of 2008. Now, in fall of 2008, when all of the financial crisis broke, you noticed that the Congress came to the bank's assistance within a week.
Oh, yeah.
Days.
It was fast.
It was days. And now we are 5 years out from that time.
But Dave, they're too big to fail.
Oh, don't get me started.
I'm sorry. I know that's going to encourage language that we can't have. We have on the phone with us Alicia. Good morning, Alicia. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'm here in Vancouver, Washington. My crisis goes back to 2005, actually, is when it started for us, when my husband went out for a $50,000 loan over the phone. It was given to him, and it was a collusion. That word I heard, that is exactly what was happening. There was collusion between my husband, the loan officer, and the title company. And to disenfranchise me of my rights as a wife, an investor in this home, because when we went for the refi in 2005, October 2005, I had had a fusion done on my neck, and I couldn't look down. And, you know, we'd gone for a refi before, and I paid off a $20,000 second and alleviated all our debt with my inheritance and had a baby I was nursing at home. And I just was kind of like, oh, okay, I'm cool. You know, everything's fine. I was down to my last $10,000 from my inheritance, so I was just like, okay, I'm going to kick back, everything's cool, and we go for this refi, and in the middle of the refi was a quitclaim deed, okay, and I look down, and I'm initialing along, you know, da-da-da-da-da, and this is before he's taking out the $50,000 second, right, because he's going to do this behind my back, because what happens is, I look down and I'm thinking, okay, wait a minute, History 101, the Oklahoma land grab, you know, quick ideas. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. So I said, is there a problem here? Because I have no debt. I've eliminated all my husband's debt. I paid off a $20,000 second. Curtis, what the heck is going on here? You know, and why am I being taken off the title? You know, and off the loan. And they said, well, this is just for expediency's sake, Alicia. I said, well, I hope so, because I have no debt, you know, and I alleviated all my husband's debt. So, you know, I don't know what the problem is. Oh, no, you'll be put on next week. That never happened. Mm-hmm. Next week turned into 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, and I'm looking at my husband going, what the heck is going on? You know, why are you doing this? You know, why won't you put my name back on? So our marriage was drastically, at that moment, going downhill, and I was really upset about it. Then he, behind my back, takes out this $50,000 second, of course, which sinks us even further, and I file for divorce, just going, what the heck, you know, is going on? This man has totally left us behind. And come to find out in the divorce proceedings that the title company and the loan officer put down that he made over $10,000 a month. He was a glass man installation. You know, that would have made him make $120,000 a year. I laughed in the courtroom. I said, what, are you crazy? If we cleared $35,000, we'd be lucky. You know, I said, what the heck? I said, right here, you can see there's collusion to disenfranchise me of my rights as a wife and a homeowner, an investor in this home. You know, I've sunk like $80,000 of my inheritance into this property, into my husband, this house. What the heck is going on here? And they just ignored me. Clark County court system ignored me. I was for 2 years in a battle over custody, and this main property we have, which was, it was at $280,000 in 2005, 2006. Now my property is $160,000 on the books. I'm not upside down, but B of A sure is trying to make it look that way. They would not answer my phone calls because my name wasn't on the title, and it was quitclaim deeded back to me, but my credit was ruined by then, and I couldn't negotiate with them. And when I did get a good job, they still would not talk to me because I wasn't on the loan. And, you know, even though I was on the title. So the whole mess up. And then attorneys would look at me and say, dang, you should just get this house outright because you've been there 21 years. You know, you're disabled. You have a child in the home. And I said, well, I can't even get my foot in the door to talk to anybody about this crisis.
I believe that Dave has something to add to this.
Yeah, I think this is very common story, your interactions with the banks, because what their strategy is to give people the runaround, mm-hmm. wear them out, and then kick them out. And it's pretty much a paradigm and a playbook that they have.
I call it the sociopathic paradigm that we're living through.
Absolutely, yeah. What they want to do, though, is they want to give people the runaround, say, no, don't talk to this person, talk to that person. No, don't talk to that person, talk to this person. They call you every day. You have to give your loan number. You have to go through three levels of operators. They can't tell you anything, any concrete information. Say that, well, we're going to call you back tomorrow. And you have to read the same information over and over and over again.
Yes.
You make your application for your modification. You get a letter back 3 months later. You've been turned down, but you can apply again, and you can keep going through the process until you're completely worn out and you leave. And some people, you should never leave your property.
Never
leave your home. Do not move out
I filed for bankruptcy to stop their auction. The auction date, you know, we went all the way to the auction date, which was May 10th. And so I did emergency bankruptcy proceeding with the help of my father, because, of course, it's very expensive. It's $2,400. But what I found out was that the money that would go to you, like I have equity, right? I only owe, $137,000, but after they tack on all their, you know, different stuff, it's $150,000.
Okay, their fees, yeah.
Well, my property's still worth $180,000, you know, regardless. But they want to take that profit, and that goes to the bankruptcy attorney and to the trustee. And they split it. And one of these real estate agents told me, you know, I think it's so crooked, the whole business, letting attorneys in instead of giving the property.
From a real estate person, that's very interesting.
Yeah, it's a rigged game. It's a rigged game. It's a racket.
It's a racket. I mean, it's a big-time racket. And I think the court systems are so tied up with to disenfranchise people. It really is a racket. And the collusion, the word collusion that was mentioned, I don't know who said that, but that was the word that came up to me in 2006 when my life began to unravel. So my process of unraveling has been 8 years now that I've been battling this thing. And I'm worn, and I'm at the very last end. So I would like to know, is there anyone you know in Southwest Washington who is working for rights for people to stay in their homes?
Beyond Oregon, do you know of resources and community resources in Washington?
This is Mike, and I'm not really connected to people that are fighting in Vancouver, but I know a lot of people that are organizing to defend homeowners' rights to stay in their homes and for housing justice and housing as a human right in Portland. So I think maybe one of the things you could do is come on over here across the river to an event or a meeting. I know, for instance, folks get together one Tuesday night a month. The next one is going to be June 4th from 6 to 8 p.m. at St. Andrew's Church on 8th and Alberta, and that's the organizing committee, the OC, that we are helped organize and put together. Debbie's in it. Dave, the other guest here, is in it. And there's a lot of people there that are either facing foreclosure and eviction or supporting those who are. And like I said, 6 to 8, June 4th. And if you come down there, you can at least network with other people in the metro area. And it's a small world. So chances are somebody in that group is connected to somebody. And I think the question about, you know, what can we do?
Yeah.
It's really not up to anyone but us. But when we're alone, we do need to reach out to other folks and organize ourselves to take care of the problems that we face and support each other in doing that. You know, Debbie, she did not move out. She was forcibly evicted from her home, you know, by armed police and sheriffs. But prior to that happening, the community had organized itself and did the best that they could to defend her home. If that meant people being in there in shifts around the clock to do that, then that was the case. You know, she's one person who, because the police and sheriff were able to take advantage of the situation, lost her home. But there are other folks who are fighting. And I say that because in one sense, she lost, but she's still fighting and people are still here fighting. And I'm listening to the news and I'm hearing things like foreclosures are down. Uh-huh. But what they don't tell you is one of the reasons foreclosures are down is because people are standing up all over the country and organized and fighting this.
Mm-hmm,
and,
that's right.
You know, we're going to keep fighting. And there's going to come a time where the banks are going to have to either answer to the will of the people or be out of business, you know.
Well, let me put my name out and number in case someone out here in Vancouver.
You might not want to do that on the air. You can give it to our engineer.
I will do that. And that way, if someone over here would like to organize with me, we can get our own group together as well as meet over there with you guys at St. Andrews on June 4th. I definitely want to come over there.
Yeah, what you should do is come to a meeting with us. And there we have activists that are working. Another friend of mine is out in Washington County in Beaverton, and she's working with people all over the country and assisting people all over the country. And there are people out there that want to help you that are going through the same thing mm-hmm. themselves. And it's really an outrage what the banks have done. And people should stay outraged about this and actively network with other folks, because you'll find that your story is strangely similar. Mm-hmm. Everything that's happening to you is happening to people all over the country, and not like a few. I'm talking thousands of people are going through the same thing. The banks are telling you them the same thing they're telling you. They're doing this. They're using the same exact tactics, and the fraud is exactly the same. It's systematic. It's a systematic. Yep. Paradigm that they've got going on here.
And one of the first things for folks to know is that they're not alone, and also that because isolating and disenfranchising people is a very powerful tactic, and that's like the first thing that you can overcome.
Exactly, and I think in my case, being that I'm a woman, and that it was collusion with, you know, my husband, the loan officer, and the title company representative, I really think I must not be alone in that situation.
No, you're not.
You're not alone at all.
There must have been a lot of women who were, you know, their husbands are up against the gun, they've lost their jobs, you know, and this is back, like I said, 2005, 2006 that this happened.
Mm-hmm.
So already the economy was going down at that point, and the banks were just throwing out and making up these numbers. Yeah. You know,
hey, Alicia,
I have to make $10,000 a month. It was ridiculous.
Hey, Alicia, thank you very much for your call this morning. And I wish that your story was more rare, but again, it's not. And really, good luck in finding the people that you need to organize with. We the organizers exist, and connect on up that meeting again, June 4th. Where exactly again?
That's at St. Andrew's Church. It's on 8th and Alberta. I don't have the exact address, but it's the church takes up a whole block. You can't miss it.
You can't miss it.
And if you go around to the back side of the church, there's a room, and we'll have signs up about where we're meeting.
Is there a website that y'all have?
Yeah, there's a We Are Oregon website. There's a Hyphy website. Right now, Hyphy's got a Facebook presence. So if you're on Facebook, you can go to Facebook-Housing is for Everyone.
Okay.
And you can, you know, like us or
connect
send us a message. And then The contact number for We Are Oregon is 503-674-2207, or you can email info@weareoregon.org. You can go to the We Are Oregon website, weareoregon.org, and We Are Oregon and HIFI are working together, so you can contact HIFI through We Are Oregon. I wanted to say a couple of things, if I could, about some of this collusion. Fannie Mae evicted Debbie from her home. You know, they evicted her and her family. And they placed armed guards in there around the clock. If you were to go to Debbie's house, the house she lived in, McRoberts Security has guards sitting in there right now. They're paying these guards to sit in there 24 hours a day to keep her house empty. The current cost to taxpayers to keep her home empty, $68,799.77. If you go to weareoregon.org, you can see a ticker and you can see a picture of the house with the armed security. And this is a cost. It's, I think, you know, in questioning how this society prioritizes money, is it really worth the cost to keep somebody homeless? You know, that's what we're really talking about. And then if I could, I have one more figure just to put things in perspective. It's, this is from Dave Stockman, and I share this with people because I love it. In 1985, the wealthiest 5% had a net worth of $8 trillion, which is a lot. Today, the top 5% have a net worth of $40 trillion. And here's the clincher. The top 5% have gained more wealth than the whole of the human race had created prior to 1980. And that's Dave Stockman. That's Ronald Reagan's budget guru. So this is coming from the 1%. This isn't a conspiracy theory. Mm-hmm. It's like this consolidation of wealth at the expense of working people.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing we have to do about it is to organize ourselves on a local level, on a national level.
That's right.
And Mike, when you just said, I mean, it's profound. Is it worth the cost to keep people homeless? You know, I mean, and really, what does it serve to pay thousands of dollars to keep people locked out of their homes? I mean, I'm sure that, you know, Debbie would have stopped the property from being destroyed by marauders or whatever those security guards are doing. But I don't think the security guards are so much worried about marauders as they are about the community rehousing Debbie and her family, because that sets a precedent.
Right.
That's resistance.
Right.
And that breaks the system. That's what they don't want. They'll pay it. When it comes to that, our money is no object.
Right.
They can keep using the tax dollars to keep the system working for themselves.
Well,
about sending a message. What those guards are there for is about sending a message to the public.
That's exactly it.
That it's like gangsters. You got a nice store here. Be a shame if you lost it.
Yeah,
it's,
right.
What they're doing is they're sending a message to people that this is what you get if you mm-hmm. if you mess with us.
That's exactly
and they would rather spend the money and lose a little money to send a message. It's a negative PR campaign.
Well, let me send my message.
And I got to say, We Are Oregon also has a Facebook presence, and I've just pulled that up, and I see pictures of people standing on Debbie's lawn. I'm guessing it's Debbie's lawn because everyone has signs saying that we support
that's
Debbie.
My house.
All right. So you are.
And the other thing, Teresa Mitchell just messaged us, and one of the things is for, and I'm sure, Debbie, that you can go along with that, that all communications with banksters really have to be notified, certified,
yes,
and filed very, very carefully, and don't believe anything till you see it written out, and don't sign anything until you have consulted a bunch of people, because they've got time, you can have some time too.
And banks lie. I don't know if you know this, but they lie.
No. How does that
happen?
Well, do you know,
I don't know.
Gina McCarthy, who is going to be the new head of the EPA, I presume. I was just trying to Google what bank her family had, this bank in Chicago she's going to be the richest person on the cabinet. She's a billionaire. And completely, that bank went up in flames with people's retirement and blah, blah, blah.
Oh.
And they said, what do you think about that? Anyway, I've been trying to find the name of the bank on the internet, and I can't seem to find it. It doesn't seem to be readily a piece of information, but I'm sure someone will tell us. But they asked her how she felt about that, and she goes, oh, I'm pretty sorry. Oh, I'm not happy. No, she wasn't even sorry. She almost said that. She wasn't happy about it.
She said it was She said it was unfortunate.
That's right.
After stuttering and stammering.
That's right, because she couldn't. Oh, that's so unfortunate. Those poor unfortunates.
Fortunate for you, though.
Yeah, real fortunate for her.
Damn, how does that
work?
And
then you get a cabinet position, too. Yeah, so there you go. Crazy.
Well, let's talk to Kenny. Shall we talk to Kenny? Good morning, Kenny. You're on the air.
Maybe. Maybe not.
Let's.
Kenny. Kenny? Is Kenny?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Oh, there you
are. Kenny.
Good morning.
Kenny.
All right. Good
Sorry,
morning. Yeah. I hear a lot of blame going towards the bank, which is you know, correct and everything. But you just can't forget who's letting this happen. Also, who appointed these guys when he first got into presidency was Barack Obama. His first appointments to his cabinet were Paulin and Geithner there from straight from Goldman Sachs coming over there.
Yeah, he's Mr. Obama has figured out his retirement already.
And, yeah, and if
he's financially going to be financially sound.
It's a shame that we elected this guy a second time and we still haven't gotten the message. We cannot elect Democrat or Republican no more. They're both the same. They're in the same
mm-hmm.
boat. It's all a big game. The government here. It's like a play. You know, it's theatrics. You know, and but they all want the same goal, to try to bring the middle class down and bring the rich people up and control us. And until we start electing third-party candidates, beginning at the bottom here, like in Oregon, I think we're going to keep running into the same mess over and over and over again.
I agree.
I would just say this. Good to hear what you have to say, because I think there's a collective consciousness out there, and there's millions and millions and millions of people who agree with you. And what we have to do above all is to demand whoever is in power mm-hmm. do the right thing. They have to do the right thing, and that means following the law. That means everybody is subject to law. If people break the law, if they're a CEO, they have to go to jail. That is the consequence. And I think that, you know, your observations about who Obama appointed in his cabinet as the Attorney General, as the Treasury Secretary, all of these people, I felt the same way that you do. And I think that what we have to do is to demand that Obama does the right thing and gets rid of these people and gets people in who are going to do the right thing by the economy. And that means doing the right thing for everybody in the economy, from the working class to the middle class, the poor, everybody. And the rich can still make their money. But ordinary people like you and me and everybody else, we have to have a chance, too. We have to have a chance, too. And that's
I just don't think it's going to happen by demanding Obama do something. He's had 8 years to do something, or 6 years, whatever it's been so far. And he hasn't done nothing but make it worse. Mm-hmm. His appointees are even getting worse. I mean, here the head of the FDA is an ex-Monsanto lawyer. He's just letting all these GMO. You know, it's a different subject, but it's on the same point that he's mm-hmm. just putting all these appointees in there that have, you know, not the people's, you know, mindset. You know,
the foxes are guarding the hen house. Yes.
Yeah, it's not going to work until we get third parties in there. I'm sorry, man.
I think that you're pointing out a phenomenon that happens again under every president I've certainly lived through, without exception. And what we're seeing is Obama's continuation of the Bush policies, and those were the continuation of, you know, the Clinton policies. And, you know, it's in there does seem to be, you know, the main point of revolving door cabinetry. The cabinet members are often selected from the industries that they are then supposed to be regulating, and you know, that doesn't work so well, as you're pointing out. So I absolutely take your point. I don't actually think I've heard anyone here say that we should just demand the president do something about this. What I'm seeing are communities organizing to have direct influence within their communities now, and that's what I'm seeing, because I honestly got to say, if anyone is saying, yeah, we just need to write to the president and have him take care of this, then they're sadly delusional.
Yeah,
indeed.
Hey, can you be more specific about that last point the gentleman made there? He was saying something about there's guards at their houses now. Who's paying for that? Is that a...
Oh, you're paying for it.
Well, you know, it's funny because when I don't really... The IRS... And taxes are pretty complicated. I don't really understand exactly how they work. But I do know that when I go to work and I get a check, that there are taxes taken out of my check.
And they pay for things like war and bailing out banks and so on and so forth. And Fannie Mae was funded by taxpayers' money. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a federal organization. Fannie Mae is who foreclosed on Debbie, who ultimately paid for her eviction. So I don't have the receipts and copies of the paper trail. But the bottom line is that money comes out of all of our pockets to create this crisis that's making a very few people a lot of money and taking away the standard of living for a whole lot of other people.
And, you know, when you put it like that, it sounds a little like the Inquisition.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, you can be jailed, but we're going to actually make you pay for the matches that we're eventually going to, you know, burn you with.
I've got a stickler to all of this, okay? Fannie Mae, the loan we had when we refinanced was $220,000, okay? I received a thing in the mail from Fannie Mae saying, well, your loan was $220,000. We now are appraising your house at $234,000. Therefore, you owe us $14,000. Pay it up, please. They steal my house, and now they're saying you owe us $14,000. Well, you know what you can kiss.
Mm-hmm. They're adding, you know, literally it's insult to injury. It's kicking you when you're down. I saw a good meme the other day. It said, if you kick me when I'm down, you're going to be screwed when I get up. And so here's the best part of the equation is that the people are getting up. And, you know, if you look at the odds, there's a whole lot of us and there's a few of them. And without us going to work and without us paying, their scheme doesn't work. The house of cards, when the base falls, then the top of the pyramid falls. And we like, I just have to reiterate, we have to be organized because we have to figure out how we're going to keep ourselves housed, you know, how we're going to keep ourselves fed and how we're going to support each other when their system that's been robbing us isn't in place. We're going to have to create our own infrastructures. You know, people like homeowners like Debbie and Dave and folks who are getting together and supporting each other in the city, we have to build alliances with houseless people that are fighting for their right to be where they're at, like Right to Dream. You know, Right to Survive. You know, we need to, the sit lie ordinance died. Dave went down to a hearing and talked to people in Salem a few weeks ago. So that's good. They're not going to be able to criminalize people for just being in public space, for just being on the sidewalk. But you know, there's a houseless bill of rights that needs to be passed. There's homeowners bill of rights that needs to be passed. Mm-hmm. This whole struggle that we're facing is based on some common principles, like how housing is a human right. Everybody has a right to housing. For every empty house, you know, there's what, 24 people that are homeless in this city and across the country. And, you know, figures like that, there's enough housing available for everyone to be housed. Yeah. We need to demand that. And if the government isn't going to do it, then we need to be in there taking that land and liberating it and putting people in those places. And the people who are doing that work need to be supported by a mass of organized people so that when the police and the sheriff show up, the people were there. Hundreds of people were there and they're saying no. And it doesn't even have to be violent, but it has to be understood that it's our right to be sheltered and housed.
Mm-hmm. I just want to make one little correction. It's Penny Pritzker. Not Gina. Gina McCarthy was an ex-Apple exec that's with the APA now. It's Penny Pritzker, and it was Superior Bank in Chicago. I just want to get the facts
out there. And we thank astute listeners everywhere for letting us know.
Thank you, listeners. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Penny was, I think Penny is part of the Hyatt family. And they have some
grandfather
tax exemption that they'll never have to pay taxes at any rate.
And are notoriously heinous to their employees, yes.
Yeah, but I think that what people have to do is not one thing, but everything. And I understand, like Kenny, you're really disillusioned with the system. What their plan is to get they want to keep people disillusioned and have people withdraw and have people walk away.
Isolation.
so that they can run the show.
Right.
And that's their whole strategy. And
what, and if we, you keep people hopeless, it really helps too.
What we have to do is the opposite of what they want. They want to divide people. We need to bring people together. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people I hear from a lot of so-called conservatives these days, although I don't know what they're trying to conserve, but I hear from conservatives a lot. I think a lot of them are misinformed when they realize what these banks are doing that are hurting them too.
Well, they're
hurting
about
everybody.
The terrorists that are going to be coming after them.
Well, they're misinformed.
You think?
I don't want to be mean or insult people, but I think they're misinformed. And when they realize what is really going on, we can all come together, because I think just human nature, we are a social species. And we need to come together, and we need to talk with one another and share the facts. When we realize the facts of what's going on, we can all move forward, and we can say, well, what is justice? Justice is where we have laws. Laws are regulations. We have to have laws to have a society. And when people violate those laws, they have to face the consequences. If they're a CEO, well, there's consequences.
Absolutely. We only have about 4 minutes left in this program, so time is running out. We have Christo, who can get in for a very quick comment, and then I want to leave people with the contact information again for, you know, people getting involved. That's really the essence of the show. That's to, you know, encourage that resistance in a positive fashion, however you can see yourself as part of the solution. So let's make sure that information gets out there too. Christo, good morning. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, very quickly.
So I have a question. It's like a lot of us who are sort of outside of this story, who are possibly home buyers, you know, how do we make a decision as to, you know, which bank is more trustworthy? You know, where does the scam begin and where does the scam end? You know,
oh my gosh, we only have 5 minutes of show left.
So are all the banks in this collusion? You know, is like,
yes,
yes,
yes.
They're all involved.
Yes,
yes. That's the you know, real root of the problem now, is because people don't know who to trust, and it's really hard to find.
That's why they succeed. They are united. That's why we need to be united.
To make it really simple, and I know I'm going to open up a can of worms, because I have to go to work and I have to pay bills. And so I operate within the system myself. However, capitalism is the root of this issue right now. I don't care what stripe you paint yourself politically. Capitalism is the root. It's a fact. It's operating this way because its whole motive is to increase profit. And right now it has to increase profit at the expense of all of us. The solution is to create an alternate system.
All right. Thank you very much, Christos. And Mike.
Thank you very much
for saying what you said.
Okay, we've got like a minute left to sort of wrap up. So,
and give that contact information.
Give your contact info. So thank you all very much. Thank you, Debbie Austin. Thank you for coming and sharing your story.
Wait, let them get their contact info. Then we'll think.
So contact We Are Oregon at 503-674-2207 or email info@weareoregon.org. Facebook / Housing is for Everyone. And we'll see you at one of these meetings on Tuesday nights. June 4th is the next one, 6 to 8, St. Andrew's Church, 8th in Alberta.
Excellent. Well, that was a very quick wrap-up of your contact information.
We have time to thank Debbie. I'll thank Debbie again. Thank you, Debbie
welcome.
Austin.
And thanks for your continued work in this matter. It is a huge matter. It's absolutely important and vital to our communities and to everyone. Housing is a human right, and let's make it so. Thanks for being with us, and continue to be positively revolting.
That's what my kids say.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is 9 o'clock in the a.m. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, revolutionary activist, organizer, and author Ajamu Umi speaks on radical organizing. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features an in-depth interview with Middle East scholar Phyllis Bennis on the expanding war in Syria. And at 11, it's Portland Prepared with a focus on the psychology of disasters. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a KBOO member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm. Click where it says Donate Today. Stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to be a media sponsor for the Resistance Ecology Conference, to be held at Portland State University, May 31st through June 2nd. Topics addressed by panel discussions, speakers, and workshops include repression and prison injustices, globalization and imperialism, racial and ethnic struggles, sexual and gender politics, and more. More information about the Resistance Ecology Conference can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Have you heard about the Melting Pot Silent Mobile Dance Parties?
Silent dance? Doesn't sound very fun.
Actually, it's a lot of fun. Picture 200 people dancing with headphones to the same music. The Melting Pot radio show will have a series of silent dance parties from 8 to 10 p.m. Tuesdays in Portland parks and public spaces. That's Tuesdays from 8 to 10 p.m. For more information and this week's location, go to kboo.fm/silent dance parties.
Sunday, June 2nd, 2013, at 5 p.m., Lynn Fitch, the KBOO station navigator, will make a special public service announcement at the KBOO Community Radio Station, 20 Southeast 8th, off Burnside and 8th in Southeast Portland. This 15-minute special announcement will also interrupt regularly scheduled programming and be broadcast live due to its significant nature and importance to the community, KBOO members, volunteers, and hosts. It will also be translated into Spanish. Please join me at the station or listen online or 90.7 FM KBOO. Thank you.
And we are back with KBOO. Coming up next, we hear a talk by revolutionary activist, organizer, and author Ajamu Umi on radical organizing. He spoke at the Law in Disorder Conference earlier this month at Portland State University. And here we go.
We're going to talk about the politics of imprisonment in a settler colony, and I'm just going to give a brief presentation about that. Okay, so just so you know a little bit about me, I live here in this settler colony part of the country right now. I'm an organizer for the All African People's Revolutionary Party, which is an independent Pan-African revolutionary political party based in Africa. I spent a lot of time organizing all over the world for that political party. I'm also part of the Blazing Arrow Organization, which is a local resistance group here that's involved in all of the housing justice work. Have y'all heard about that? People being kicked out of their houses here and people moving them back in, resisting police. That's what we do. My young brother comrade here, Itzley, is actually facing some charges. Y'all need to support him for us helping people stay in their houses. So we do that. I also work for SEIU, the union, and do a lot of organizing work for them. So I know some of you from that as well. So greetings. Those are all sides of me. So what is a settler colony? What's a settler colony?
Occupied land.
Occupied land. What else? That's true. What else is it? A nation of sovereignty?
An invasion.
Invasion of sovereignty. Okay. Yes. Anybody else?
Probably exploitation of natural resources.
Right. Right. And of course, you all know, as you're saying all those wonderful things, that we're sitting on one of the settler colonies right here, a land that was stolen from the indigenous people and is maintained, built on the backs of those people. So the basis of what we're going to talk about here today is that a lot of the economy of this society was built on the triangular slave trade. Y'all, you know that, right? So because that happened, it supplied a tremendous amount of free labor to build up the economic wealth of this society, and the society of the industrialized capitalist world came from the exploitation brought on by the triangular slave trade. The problem that's happened is now we fast forward to 2013, and the cotton has been picked. There are machines to do it now. They don't need people to do it. So the question is, what happens to all those millions of people who essentially are here